Hello and welcome to another episode of Beer Books with me, Daisy Ray.
And me, April Berry. And it's your favourite type of episode, Daisy, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. I do love story time. I just love using our imaginations and writing stories and being told stories. And actually, I'm not having a story of my own on this episode. We've got one from yourself.
Yes.
And we've got one from George Thompson today.
I find it really strange because I just don't have an imaginative bone in my body.
I beg to differ.
Well, I don't think I have, let's put it that way. And I kind of really struggle on this to get a story out. And I've done quite well this week in getting a story out, and it's edited to death. It really is. But
how can you say you've got no imagination? How many flash fiction stories have you written over the past 4 years?
Quite a few, but most of them...
You're in double figures.
Yeah, but most of them are based in reality, somewhat.
Realistic fiction.
Yeah, realistic fiction. So I'm not airy-fairy and fluffy and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, see what you think. This is just called Coco. Coco sat by the front door. This was her favourite time of the day. Her humans were home from work. She loved this routine, high five with her paw to get her favourite treat, and then stepping into her harness in anticipation of the walk to come. Coco actually hated the harness and refused to walk anywhere before the lead was attached. But once it was, she was raring to go, nearly breaking out of the door to get to her favourite place on earth, the beach. But Coco wasn't allowed to go to the beach any longer. That made her really sad. She had so many great memories of the beach, picnics, chasing seagulls, her paws leaving tiny imprints in the warm sand, paddling in the sea, sniffing in the rock pools. Though she wasn't too keen on the little crabs, they were not that friendly, and she could still feel the stinging on her nose sometimes from the claws where they had nipped. One memory stood out to her more vividly than any other, though. The day had been the same as all the other times. She had smelt the sea water in the air, heard the cawing of the gulls, but the one thing she couldn't remember hearing was the laughter of the children. Oh well, never mind. At least she had looked forward to seeing Rory. She hoped he would be there, as she loved running on the sand, being chased by him and play fighting. Coco had pulled on her lead, a tussle of wills between her and her human. Although she was only little, she was quite strong, very strong-willed with a lot of feisty thrown in the mix. When Coco reached the beach, she had sensed that something was off. She could see Rory's humans, but there was no sign of Rory. Where was he? Her humans had unclipped her lead and she ran down to the edge of the water. Why was one of Rory's humans waist-deep in the sea? How unusual. She could see the other of Rory's humans crying at the water's edge, and she ran over, pushing her nose into their leg. She felt a hand stroking her back, but it was shaking, not nice and firm and friendly like normal. Suddenly Coco heard a noise, a yelp. She looked up and in the distance could see a little figure bobbing about. Coco recognised a scent, strong above the salty smell of the sea. She could smell Rory, but where was he? She had heard Rory's name being called, but no Rory appeared. She had looked at the bobbing figure in the distance and recognised it as Rory. Why was he in the sea? Coco loved swimming, but she knew Rory hated it, so she only ever went in the sea when he wasn't there. Coco had instantly known Rory was in trouble, so without any hesitation she had bounded into the water, her determination unwavering. With each powerful stroke, Coco propelled herself through the waves, her small frame cutting through the water with surprising agility. As she reached the struggling figure, she made a grab for the back of Rory's harness. Making sure she had a firm grip between her teeth, Coco turned towards the shore. She could see it wasn't far, but now, as she held Rory, she could feel her strength ebbing. Coco, though, was a fighter, and digging deep into her stubborn resolve, she started to make her way back, slowly making headway, dragging Rory behind her. Despite the relentless pull of the ocean, Coco refused to falter, her determination unwavering as she fought against the powerful current. With each stroke, the distance between Coco and the shore dwindled, until finally, with one final surge of effort, they reached the safety of the beach. Exhausted but triumphant, Coco dropped Rory at the feet of one of his humans. Coco felt herself being swept off the sand, instantly recognizing the smell of her humans. All she wanted to do was shake all the water from her coat, but it was impossible as she was being held in a vice-like grip, which was unusual and, thought Coco, quite uncomfortable. Her human started to walk across the beach to the road, crossing the road, running in front of the cars in a reckless manner and practically sprinting up the streets until they reached home. Coco's human struggled to get the keys in the door and once inside had plonked Coco on the settee, dried her off and spent the rest of the evening suffocating her practically with hugs and kisses until bedtime. That night she was allowed to even sleep on the bed. Ah well, thought Coco as she stared at the closed door, as still as a statue in her harness, hoping that today might be the day she got to go back to the beach.
So Coco is like the bravest little dog in the world and ran into the sea to save Rory.
Yeah.
I want to give Coco a cuddle. Oh, beautiful little doggy. What sort of doggy is Coco?
She's a little shih tzu.
Oh, how nice is that? I mean, yes, dangerous and sad and oh my God, let's not let Rory drown.
No.
But Coco, I'd give Coco so many treats and I'd smother with cuddles. There'd be so many cuddles, she wouldn't know what to do with herself.
It's really funny, actually, because I did struggle to write that.
Is Coco a girl or a boy?
She's a little girl.
She's a little girl, okay. Why did you struggle to write it?
I don't know, because it was just, it's so weird. How do you write a story about a dog? And I wanted to write it from the dog's perspective, but I've got no idea how a dog thinks.
I do get that. It would be, I don't know how a dog would think, to be honest.
No.
I always imagine dogs are like all high energy and let's go for a walk. Oh, look, a treat. Oh, look, humans are home. Oh, look, bedtime. Oh, look, let's go and play around the garden. Like that sort of thing. That's how I imagine dogs are, whereas cats would be, oh, for God's sake, human, just get on with it.
Yeah. And that's what they are like. They absolutely are. So it was difficult. I edited it to death, so...
That's good, though. It's good when you can take a step back and then rip it to shreds if it needs it to make your story better.
Yeah.
And what's the title of it?
Coco.
Coco.
Yeah, Coco. Just simply Coco.
I like Coco. I think Coco's a lovely dog. I imagine Coco being a chocolate-coloured shih tzu.
Strangely enough, so did I as well. Anyway, enough about Coco. What's the next story?
Okay, so we've had a story in from George Thompson, and he's written a story called Bad Boys. And the reason I like this story is because he's written it from the perspective of the dog.
All right, so two stories from the perspective of the dog. So you're going to read this one to us then, Daisy?
I am. I really, really like this one, so I hope I do it justice for George. Bad Boys by George Thompson. Ruby, the faithful four-legged guardian of the Thompson family, had a peculiar conviction that set her furry world alight. In her doggy wisdom, she firmly believed that the dustbin men who turned up every Wednesday to collect rubbish from her house were not exactly human. No, in Ruby's eyes, these seemingly ordinary bin men were, in fact, extraterrestrial beings, hailing from a distant and unknown planet. She had coined a name for these mysterious entities: Bad Boys. Every bin day, Ruby would position herself strategically by the living room window, her keen canine senses attuned to the approaching bad boy invasion. As the bin lorry rumbled down the street, Ruby's ears perked up and her eyes fixated on the bad boys, convinced they were executing an otherworldly plot to infiltrate her territory. Why else were they stealing all the good smells from outside their house? Her attempts to alert her humans were met with bemused chuckles and gentle pats on the head. Mrs. Thompson, sipping her morning cuppa, would playfully dismiss Ruby's frantic barking as the whimsical antics of an overimaginative pup. Little did she know that Ruby was on a mission to save Earth from the impending bad boy apocalypse. Despite her best efforts, Ruby's warnings continued to fall on deaf ears, and the bad boys continued their rubbish collecting routine, oblivious to the canine conspiracy theorist observing them from behind the living room window. Ruby, however, remained undeterred in her mission to protect her beloved family and the rest of the world from the devious bad boys. The Thompsons, unaware of Ruby's interstellar concerns, carried on with their daily lives. Mr. Thompson was particularly skeptical of Ruby's extraterrestrial claims. He dismissed his dog's antics as mere canine quirkiness, a product of an overactive imagination fueled by way too many late-night sci-fi movie marathons. You'd have to put a stop to those. One day, as the bad boys went about their rubbish-collecting duties, Ruby couldn't shake the feeling that something was amiss. Her keen senses detected peculiar vibrations and strange odours emanating from the bin lorry. Desperate to expose the truth, Ruby devised a cunning plan. Under the cover of darkness, Ruby stealthily followed the bad boys to their bin lorry lair. Her furry paws moved with ninja-like precision as she tailed the unsuspecting aliens. Hidden behind a row of wheelie bins, Ruby observed as the bad boys exchanged mysterious signals, all the while talking to each other in a language she just couldn't understand. She watched as they emptied all the delicious and enticing good smells they'd stolen from all the wheelie bins on her street into a pile so big it would have buried their house and their neighbours on both sides. They really were here to take over the world. The bad boys were going to suck all the goodness out of life until there was nothing left, and Ruby and her humans and all humankind would dry up to dust and float away on the breeze, never to be seen again. The next morning, Ruby, panting with fear and determination, burst into the Thompson's bedroom, eager to share her findings. Mr. Thompson, amused but intrigued, decided to entertain Ruby's fantastical tale this time. Together, man and dog embarked on a mission to uncover the truth behind the bad boys. They discreetly observed the bin men from a safe distance, noting their peculiar behaviours and secret exchanges. Mr. Thompson, a master of scepticism, couldn't help but feel a tinge of uncertainty. Could Ruby be onto something? Were these seemingly innocent bin men hiding a cosmic secret? It seemed so unlikely that Mr. Thompson felt a little bit foolish. As their investigation unfolded, Mr. Thompson and Ruby actually discovered a hidden world beneath the mundane surface of rubbish collection. The bad boys, as Ruby had suspected all along, were not ordinary bin men. They were intergalactic beings on a covert mission to study human behaviour and culture. Not to kidnap Ruby's humans or kill them all in their beds, as first thought. Mr. Thompson, torn between reason and the fantastical, found himself questioning the very fabric of his known reality. The once dismissed ramblings of his daft dog now carried a weight of possibility. The bad boys, it seemed, were more than meets the eye. In a twist of events, Mr. Thompson and Ruby forged an unexpected alliance with the bad boys. The intergalactic visitors, amused by the duo's relentless pursuit of truth, decided to trust them and reveal their peaceful intentions. The rubbish collection was just a cover for their covert anthropological studies. As the sun set on that fateful day, Mr. Thompson and Ruby stood in the glow of the alien spacecraft, watching as the bad boys bid farewell. The once sceptical Mr. Thompson now marvelled at the vastness of the cosmos and the mysteries that lurked just beyond the ordinary. The world was now so much bigger than he ever thought possible. Ruby, her tail wagging triumphantly, had not only saved her family from her imagined bad boy invasion, but had also opened a portal to a realm where reality and imagination danced hand in paw. Mrs. Thompson now had the teapot warm at all hours of the day and night, introducing the entire galaxy to the wonders of a good cuppa. And so the Thompson household became an unlikely hub for interstellar friendships, forever changing the narrative of Binday and the cosmic connections that unfolded under the watchful eye of Ruby. Good girl.
That's brilliant. I really like that.
I was so impressed the first time I read it.
That is really good. Well done, George. Thank you very much for that.
Yes, well done, George. Brilliant imagination.
Yeah. I can just imagine your Ruby thinking that.
My Ruby would sleep through it all. She's so lazy. I love that you called her Ruby. How good was that?
That was really good, that, yeah. As it really, really did tickle me. I thought it was quite comical as well and very well written. I like his use of words.
Yeah. Not that easy to read with his anthropologicals and everything.
No, not at all.
Managed not to fall over them.
Yeah, that was, I really like that, yes. I'm chuckling at that. That is good. But George, the last one that George submitted as well, I liked.
Maybe George writes really well when he's writing about animals of some description. Didn't he write one about wanting to be a duck, not a duck, a tortoise? A rabbit wanting to be a tortoise? Or was it the other way around?
No, it was the rabbit that wanted to be the tortoise, and then after that he wanted to be a duck.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, that's it. Of course you would. If you could be an animal, what would you want to be?
Oh, my. The first thing that comes to mind is I want to be a seahorse, but that's because I admire them so much and they're so beautiful. But I imagine that's quite a cold existence and I don't imagine the sea is very warm where they're living. I want to be something that basks in the sunshine and does very little.
A cat, do you mean?
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Or Ruby in another life.
Yeah.
Yeah, sleep 16 hours a day, bask in the sunshine, go and run up and down the beach. Life's a good one.
Yeah.
What would you be?
I don't know. I think I'd want to be a cat, but then I think I'd worry about my owner.
Why?
Would I get a good one? Because I would want an owner like me so that I, as a cat, could just lie under the radiator, get me dinner on demand, have as many toys and little crinkle balls to play with as possible.
Well, actually, you cook your animals human food. You practically have a bloody menu for them. You spoil them rotten. So yes, I imagine you do want an owner like you.
Well, why wouldn't you feed a cat cheeseburgers?
Well, lasagna.
One of his favourite foods was mussels in a cream sauce.
I'm speechless.
He loved it.
Okay, so enough about animals. What have we got coming up next week?
We have got a author interview coming up next week. I can't wait. We have both started the book.
Yeah, I've read about 60-something percent of it now and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the interview.
The book we're reading right now then is Kintsugi and it's by Jude Lennon. And she's written lots of children's books as well. And she's been on some of the local websites on Authors Week on Facebook on various groups just lately. So I've seen her around quite a bit. So I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with her.
Oh, yeah. I remember when we decided we were going to read this one, you said, well, this is aimed at young adults. I think you were wrong.
Yeah, now I've read some of it. It is simply written and it could be read by young adults quite easily, but it's really engaging.
How much of next week's podcast do you want to give away?
None, I'm sorry. If you want to join in with the conversation and you want to read Kintsugi, then do read it and then come and join us again next Wednesday and we'll have a good old chinwag about the book and learn lots more information from Jude Lennon.
Yeah, I can't wait. So until next week, take care of yourselves.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. Now you've had a listen, why not pop over and join us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
And if you want to send in your flash fiction submissions, you just need to email us at beerbookspod1@gmail.com. And now that you're part of the Beer Books family, why not share us with all the bookworms and creatives in your life?